Hello everyone, welcome to the That's How We Lead podcast series of Capgemini Netherlands. My name is Coco Leijsner and I'm your host during this series in which we talk to some of our female leaders about their career in business transformations and tech. Who are these female role models next to their responsible jobs and how did their career journey look like? Let's find out today with our guest Liesbeth Bout, Managing Director of Capgemini Event Netherlands. Welcome Liesbeth.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too, and I'm very happy to have you here as our sixth guest already. We're going to deep dive a little bit in your career and of course also who you are next to your career. But before we do that, I would like to take a step back and look back to your student time. You studied industrial engineering and management, and I was wondering, what were you like as a student?
Well, first of all, very active. So I loved everything. I was living outside the house, loved the freedom, tried to do everything. I had all kind of commissions and boards and with the education, with the study, but also with sports. So I love to do everything, explore everything. That was, I must say, the first year was a bit challenging with the study, but
Did you make it?
Yeah, I made it. Somewhere I recovered.
And what kind of boards were that?
So it was, I was active at the Horseback Riding Association. So we did also organize competitions and etc. A lot of active community. But I was also at the board of the students, the Industrial Engineering and Management Student Association.
And that was then for organizing nice activities, get-togethers?
Yeah, so it's conferences, but also supporting with the books, supporting with also a sounding board for the education.
Oh, wow.
Itself, for the teachers, etc. So all kind of things.
Oh, cool. And horseback riding, is it still something that you do?
Just during the holidays. So we lost track during COVID, to be honest. Somewhere, we did it for years. I met my husband over there.
Oh, so also during student time?
During student time, yes. Wow. So we did it together, but and with the kids, well, I can share with you. But we had to take turns, etc. And at a certain moment, we thought, wow, it's... We don't have our own horse. We were also at riding schools, which is nice because you can explore different things. But at a certain moment, we thought, we don't miss it so much, so maybe we should do something else.
Yeah. And what came as a replacement for horseback riding?
Well, so during COVID, you couldn't do so much. So yeah. I went running again. I went skating again. So things you can do more easily combined with a busy job and family life. And to be honest, since last year, we're also more on the water, more active on the water with sailing sipping or those kind of things. So it's a bit more relaxed things which you don't have to plan on a specific time slot, but it's more just to relax, to free your mind and just go.
Yeah, sounds great. Nice hobby, I can imagine. Yeah. And if we then go back to your career, your current career, you're now leading Capgemini Event for 3.5 years. For those not working at Capgemini Group, can you tell a little bit about what your role entails?
Yeah, so I'm leading the Invent organization. Invent is the management consulting strategy innovation powerhouse of the group. So we're involved in business transformation and I'm always in the consulting area. So when I started, 18, 19 years ago?
Wow.
I was a young professional out of school. Starting in the consulting side. So I was always in the business side and not so much on the technology side.
And what did you like so much about consulting?
I liked dynamics, first of all. And I like also the different aspects. It never gets boring. And of course, you can have a project or an assignment which might take a longer time because at a certain moment you get really impactful for a client after a certain moment. But then there's always things you can do next to it. So while being at the client, making an impact over there, you can think about what will be the questions that future clients should ask us, prepare the group for that, prepare some thought leadership for that, talk to some other people. So it's the dynamics which I like, which I somehow need. So I need that difference in activities and the different things to do. It's both sales, it's delivery, it's managerial-wise, it's a lot of people focused activities. So it's a broad spectrum.
Is that the same for your role now? I can imagine you're not on projects yourself anymore.
Well, I try to be. I think you cannot lead events where you're not active at clients. You should be active at clients. Otherwise, how can I be leading what others do? So otherwise, you will turn into a manager. and cannot lead. So I try to still be active with clients, but to be honest, it's the minority of my time because somehow otherwise I cannot cope with all the other activities. But I need it as well. If I don't do client work, and that can also be on the background helping in the sales pitch, doesn't need to be actively always client facing, but I need the combination because that gives me a lot of energy. And just the managerial, internal, all kind of things, which is also very nice because it's with people, it's with the team, etc. But only that will drown a little bit my energy. I need also the sometimes the thrill of a pitch, the thrill of delivery, the making the impact, what we actually do and what our purpose is in that sense.
Yeah, and I can also imagine that kind of information, everything you hear at the client by being invested yourself, that it also helps in doing your manager role well.
Yes, exactly. Because the world is changing and actually we are in the business of change. It's transformation, that's our business. So it's continuously looking ahead, and our questions that clients ask us now, they will not ask us in the future. And probably the clients that sometimes ask a question now, we should tell them, no, you should ask us a different question. And we should be that sparring partner and that challenger in that sense, which means we have to have an opinion, and you need reflection time, but you also need enough inspiration yourself, either from clients, what they're coping with, but also from outside.
Yeah. And then we're on a personal level. Who are you next to your role at Capgemini Invent?
I shared with you sometimes on the water.
Yes.
No, I'm mom of two kids. So it's, and my husband is also working full time. So it's a nice family, a busy life. I think we're trying to have a nice balance. I'm not a person party going. I like to relax, like on the water, like running, like having a nice dinner. Also doing nice things with the kids. My girl likes to make all kind of things. I like to make all kind of creative things as well.
And what can I then think of?
Oh, it's everything. It's whether it's painting or drawing, but it can be handicraft things, or I make dresses for her, those kind of things. So it's. I think it's also important because we have a quite analytical job, and you should have some time for creativity. And that creativity then flows into the job as well, because sometimes the most creative solutions are the ones we should take instead of trying to peel it off with data and analytics. So it's the creativity and time for creativity that's important. And I must say, if I'm too busy, then in the weekends the head is not free enough to start doing something creative. But if I think of, oh, I want to make something, oh, let's do it or go for it, I'm relaxed enough.
So it also
have
helps
a balance.
You to let go of work in the weekends, set your mind in a different mindset.
Yep.
Nice. About your career, you're now working almost 19 years at Capgemini. Can you take us on your journey in working at Capgemini, but also becoming a female leader?
Yeah, so I started as a young professional. To be honest, I didn't really know what to do. I thought, I don't know exactly. So my study was rather broad. It didn't give you a specific direction on what to become or what to do. So I thought, okay, let's just explore. And there was someone working at the university who worked at Capgemini. And I didn't know the company, to be honest. And she said, oh, come to us. And I said, And she was actually working in a finance transformation practice. And I thought, finance transformation? I had one course. Finance, and that's it. So I said, okay, but never mind. So I started talking, and I liked the people. So I chose the people. I said, oh, I like it. Well, later on, I did an executive master in finance and control just to keep up with the finance side of it.
And during your career, during those 19 years, did you have a certain female role model or other sorts of inspiration?
Well, there are a lot of people. I don't believe in one person who can do it all. I don't think there's one person who can do it all and who has the role model which you can go for. I think you have to make your own path which fits you, and you are unique. So there were people who were great sellers. So sales was at their back. I don't know what and how, and I learned from them. It was great to learn, but they were completely not so comfortable with the people management side. So people management and how to motivate and how to engage was something I learned from other people. So it was not just one person. And there were female and male, depending on the different energy, depending on their skills, about their strengths. And somehow you try to navigate through. And I try to make my own journey there.
So you really chose different facets from different people.
Yeah, you see things, you learn, you see what works, you see what not works, and somewhere you take it along with you. And you test.
How is
you
it talk to test? People. Because I can imagine that then also sometimes go wrong if you test.
Yeah, what can go wrong? The world is not going to diminish or something. So there's no war.
Yeah.
So what's going wrong?
Yeah, that's true.
I'm not going to die tomorrow, or I hope I don't. So if you do so, it's a different type of risk, I would say.
Have you ever made a risky move in your career?
No, I think if I think about it, at a certain moment, my husband and I thought we wanted to have an experience abroad. So we love to travel. We love to travel, to explore new cultures, etc. He was working at Philips and he had an expat opportunity for China, for Shanghai.
Cool.
So I said, yes, let's go.
Yes.
And then I said, yeah, what about you? We'll see. I'll just quit my job and then I'll move. We'll move along with you and then we'll find something there. So we confirmed to Philips for a certain date. I was already talking a bit in Shanghai, and then at a certain moment I was a part of the management team of the practice, and then there was an assignment coming by for, they were asking, there was the Swedish colleagues, they were asking for a project manager or transformation manager for a big transformation based in Shanghai per exactly the same date that we already confirmed.
Wow, it just had to be like that.
I had to work for it because I was not the only one who wanted the job, but I got it. And it was not in finance, it was HR transformation, but yeah.
How was that for you then? Totally different topic.
It's a different topic. I was already doing some broader topics, but I thought, well, HR transformation, it's the same principles as a finance transformation, but it's different type of processes and different type of people. So, yeah, if you keep that in mind, the basics are the same. So, and yeah, it's, of course, I was competing to people with HR transformation knowledge, but still, I made it. So we went to Shanghai and I thought, okay, going abroad, I was on a complete fast track. So every 2 years I got a promotion, I was just promoted to director. And one reason also for me was that I needed some pause in that growth. Because
and
I
why was that?
I was 31, I think. And if I would go like that 3 years later, probably would be VP. And then what? Yeah, and then what? I didn't feel that I was equipped yet to do so. I didn't feel that I did a complete end-to-end business transformation yet. I did all kind of facets and parts of it. But the full end-to-end transformation, I didn't do that yet. So I needed some more miles, flying miles. Because, yeah, you have to work. What is it? You have to love working. Yeah. You're probably 70 or so. You have to keep the energy. It's not the objective to grow fast. It's the objective to learn and to explore and to keep the energy. So that was one of the reasons that we say, okay, let's go abroad and we'll see. What does it matter? Well, we'll be fine. I think I didn't really pause, to be honest. Maybe it took a little bit longer because I was 2 years away. But never mind, I was still active also in the Netherlands because I kept my contract in the Netherlands. I still had some counselees, some mentor people.
Wow, from Shanghai, managing the counselees.
And it was not in the Teams environment yet.
Oh, wow.
It's all by phone, and sometimes by visit. But so I was still active in the community. But it was good. It was good to have that reflection, to have that different experience.
Yeah, and what I also hear, indeed, you know, mention reflection is that you were very serious in reflecting on yourself, on your growth, on your learn path. Has that been from the start when you started as a young professional?
I just did what felt right. That is, I follow feelings. I don't have a dot on the horizon. I never worked with a dot on the horizon. So I never said I want to become managing director of Invent or something like that. I thought it would be crazy to do so. To actually, when I was asked, I was still like, do I really want this? It was great to say yes, by the way. But never mind. So I don't work with a dot on the horizon. I just follow an energy flow. And what feels right, and I think it's you have a long career ahead of you. It's a long working life, and the most important is to enjoy. And if you enjoy, you bring more value. You bring more to the people around you. You bring more to the clients. You bring more in general, and to your family as well. It's
very important.
you keep yourself healthy as well. So I work more in that principle. I still do. It's a little bit more on the flow. And that means it's being conscious of what do you feel. So it's and being conscious of what's happening in your body as well. When I was students, I said I was very active.
Yeah.
So there I crossed the line, the certain moment. So there I was at the certain moment completely down. Back then, it was a blessing. Eh? It was really a blessing at the time because I knew back then, okay, when do I cross a line? What is too much for me?
Yeah.
What can I handle? And why is it happening? And what were causing the energy drains versus what gives energy? And also even things that give energy might be too much. So I know when I'm getting close to that, I know how to a little bit more relaxing, close my laptop early. Focus
good.
On other things. Know how I behave in that sense. My husband knows as well. So he is like, hey, Lisbeth, you should stop.
Yeah. Now it's enough.
but it's and that's a blessing because it's you can do also within Capgemini, but I think if you have energy, you have ambition, you can continue all night long. There's always more to absorb and etc. Or there's always those people that you wanted to call but didn't call yet, but they should have some time. There's always more you can do, but it's fine. It's you do enough. It's keep yourself healthy, be energetic, and that brings more to the people around you than trying to do everything and then at a certain moment falling down. Eh?
Yeah, then it's too much and then you're too late sometimes.
Yes, so. Exactly. And I don't guarantee that's not happen. The personality is trying to do a lot. But so far, since student time, I keep myself healthy and I'm very conscious and I need that reflection time as well to reflect on the business because in the role, there's a lot of operational things as well. But you need also time for reflection on a more strategical level and that's expected from you. And you cannot do that in between half an hour, one team's call to another. So it's you have to organize it to a certain extent.
Yeah, and that's a great message for all our listeners to watch out for yourself and yeah, act on it in time. And then back to the beginning of your career, you started in data science. What initially sparked your interest in data science and how did you decide to pursue it as a career?
Yeah, so I started in reporting, performance management. I was doing data-driven decision making, but mainly on a reporting side. I have an engineering background, so I have my statistic and mathematical background as well. So I could I could switch between, I use that skill to understand, okay, what's the bigger data play? So when data science came up, what is it in somewhere 2013, 2012, 2013, something like that. And I thought, I was in finance, in business control, etc. And I thought, well, but that's cool. So data-driven decision making, but then far bigger, far impactful, far more complex because it's going through the organization with different data, with different type of things. It's not only strategical, tactical, it's also operational and you can do far more things with it. So the complexity drew me there. So there I said, okay, well, we started, I was leading finance performance management when I came back from Shanghai. And then I started a data science analytics group next to it, separately, which we grew. And that was all about driving the data-driven journey for organizations, which is still relevant today. It's very relevant today. And every organization has become, to a certain extent, typically data-driven, but there's a huge potential still. It's because it's crossed the silos of the different organizations. It's learning from each other. It's the data that is used from one department into another area. So there's a company-wide topic which should be embraced and also from a literacy point of view in every business area.
Yeah, so it's still much more to do on data-driven decision-making. There are also concerns about bias and ethics. How do you approach those issues during your work?
Yeah, well, that's a difficult question, Coco.
Tough question, I'm sorry.
Because so many facets about it. It's of course, it's the data itself. To start with data itself, are we collecting data? Which is it ethical to collect those data, to store it? So that's the starting when data is gathered. It's about in projects where you are deciding to collect certain data. Is it ethical from the start? Or ethical is one thing, whether the society accepts it is another. Might be another, or regulatory is another aspect again. But then it's about the usage. So we can use it for certain aspects, it's all fine. And many of the use cases we work with are, it's not an issue. If you, I'm working with a large manufacturing on improving their plants, reducing energy, reducing waste. Well, it's about machine data. There are no ethical aspects in there. It's ethical to do it and actually use it because it also helps sustainability and it helps to perform better and etc. So, but in other cases, where it's client data, where it's people data, you do. So it's about how to, which use cases are relevant, who has access to it. And I think one of the biggest difficulties is these days is, well, we have, all organizations have nice data science departments typically, who likes to make very nice, proper analytics things, some fancy, fancy, sexy stuff. And then it goes into operation. So you might be in the front, in the beginning, you do have your processes in place, you have your framework, your control framework on whether we want to use this data and for this purpose, and whether it's and also in the case of the people who actually use the data, the outcome of the data, or the machines will use the outcome of the data, do that in the right way. Do the people, if there are people involved, whether it's supportive, do they have understanding of what these models do, and are they able to act upon it? Because it's also to a large extent knowledge and awareness. But then, if those models are in place, the fancy data scientists might not want to be involved too much anymore. But these models keep on learning sometimes. They keep on changing. The perception of society might change. So how to make sure they're maintained, operational, and keep... And they sometimes they're changed because, oh, there's a minor tweak here and there. And then suddenly, it's not ethical anymore. Mm. So it's not only when you start with it, but it's also after with the operational, the analytic ops part of it. The operational part and how to embed it. And that's typically not the most sexy stuff. But that's the stuff that also needs to happen and where we are trying to help our customers there.
So the starting point here is, of course, the knowledge and the awareness. And then, keeping that running through the whole process, through the whole project, and ensure that everyone who is working on it, that they are well aware.
Yeah, and that someone keeps on looking at it.
Yeah,
when it's on operations, it's not because otherwise you have a legacy, does things which at a certain moment you don't want them to do it anymore.
Yeah, clear. Then a question about your career journey a little bit back. What lessons have you learned from any setbacks or failures?
So I already talked about doing too much. So that's I also said I paused a little bit. I put the brake on the fast growth I had. There was one specific moment in time which helped me to do so. I was I did a finance transformation for a CFO for a company, and that was in a certain market. I was we had the delivery of the project, and it was all fine, and I was meeting the person again. And then I'm knowledge about finance transformation, but I didn't have a specific industry background in that specific industry. The finance transformation of the CFO didn't want to talk about the finance transformation. He was just interested in my view on the market developments and those kind of things. And I was like, that's... So I was really knowledgeable about one topic, but I didn't realize that was not the topic. The project was fine. He was happy. So that was not topic of conversation anymore. So it was looking ahead, but also it's not enough to be knowledgeable about this topic. It's a broader perspective that's interesting and that makes these kind of relations also interesting, that you can bring something else.
And how has that influenced future choices?
Yeah, be conscious when you go into a meeting. What is? Sometimes I'm asked to join something, to join a pitch. And then my question always is, what is my contribution? And the contribution of just being... making the client important because of the I'm the MD of Invent is not good enough. So what is my contribution? And can I honestly contribute to that? And otherwise, maybe we should find someone else to contribute. It's not a power play. We have to bring something.
And bring then the right expertise for that conversation.
Exactly. And that's if we don't have it in the Netherlands, we should find it abroad. We are a big company, really big company. We cannot, it's not so that we invite the wheel here every time. And it might be a slightly different company or a slightly different expertise of experience, but it still might be inspirational and relevant for the topic. Be conscious where to contribute, where to not contribute, and where to put other ones in the spotlight. It's not the Lisbeth show. It shouldn't be. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great challenge question, I think, for many of us. Am I of added value joining this conversation? I really like that one. Then a question related to the digital transformation that we're in. It's a question from our previous podcast guest, Anita. And she had the question for you after nominating you, which is, digital is drastically transforming all industry sectors. What trends do you anticipate disrupting next?
Yeah, interesting one. So I think we talked about, 15 years ago was the thing, the digital transformation. We had big reports about it with MIT studies, etc. Digital transformation is the thing. Today, it's still relevant, of course. And digital is very much alive, but it's not the disruption anymore. It's an ongoing thing. It's embedded, it's improving, etc. Ahead is, I think, completely different challenge for all of us. It's about sustainability and how we behave on our planet and how we treat our planet. And it's a completely different type of thing. It's apples and pears, and digital can help us there. But we as humans need to behave, treat our planet in a better way. And we can do that ourselves, with stopping the water and taking a shower when you wash your hair, those kind of small things. But it's the impact as consultants, as being in a transformation business, is about also sparking the inspiration of our clients for that and asking the questions which they should ask us about the sustainability objectives. And many have it on their radar. There's not always the how and the what. And what you these days see is that it should be embedded. It's an either sustainability thing or it's a cost thing. It's or either sustainability thing or it's a customer engagement thing.
It's all interconnected now.
It's completely interconnected. And it's sometimes very on top of the agenda, sometimes not on the agenda yet, where we should bring it on the agenda as maybe even as just a side benefit. But we have to accelerate the sustainability and the transformation that is related to that. The whole energy transition is only part of that. Will be a challenge for us as planet for the next decades. Digital will help us. There's more. And digital can also be disruptive in some senses. I mean, as an example, data centers are heavy power users. Mm-hmm. If we're talking about data and also ethical behavior of data, it's also about being conscious not to record and gather all the data. So it's being conscious in all those different facets from different perspectives. But sustainability will stay for the next decades and we all have to act upon it from our own perspective in our own work.
Clear, and a great message for all our listeners as well to act upon that and see where can we as Capgemini, but also if you're in another company, really act on that sustainability challenge that we have ahead. And that's also related to the next question that I have for you. You already mentioned some great lessons throughout the podcast, but what would be your advice to young emerging female professionals?
Yeah, happy to. So be yourself. That's the first one. Be authentic. I think that's most important. Be able to discover who you are, where you get your energy from. And then it's not that it's everything is perfect. That's not the case. There were assignments during my career that I thought, I shouldn't be here. It's the first 2 weeks. They're awful. I should get rid of this as soon as possible. And then I was the last one of the whole project team to close the door after 1.5 years. So give it time. Do give it time. Changing your environment, changing the setting to where you can contribute to it. But be yourself in that sense. And you can change a lot. You can influence a lot if you're open. If you give some things time, but also if you ask for help, you can find your own journey in there. So be authentic and have an opinion. And that's have an opinion in terms of that, because that contributes to something. If you don't have an opinion, it won't help others. If you just do what you're told to, then it won't help others. And of course, the opinion is not always the truth. Sometimes I'll just give an opinion just to provoke sometimes a little bit of discussion, but it's be flexible. We agree on left and you thought it would be right. Well, fine, let's go left. It's better to make a step than there's no step. There's an argument. But having an opinion and thinking about what would I do in this situation helps in also finding your own journey.
Yes, perfect. Thank you. And then looking forward to the next podcast. Who would you like to nominate? And what question do you have for her?
Yeah, so I would like to nominate Sophie Weersink. She's one of our market unit leads, leading a big portion of our clients and go-to-market.
Nice.
Quite new to Capgemini, so I'm really interesting also to hear about how she sees this business coming from a completely different background.
Yeah.
And my question would be that she's covering quite a wide spread of clients. They vary widely in terms of competition, demands, so we cannot just have one go on them. So what is how to adapt your strategy, how to cater the varying client and market conditions, and to add on top of that, our people also are different than everyone. no one is perfect. Huh? We're unique, but no one is perfect. So each have their own strengths and capabilities. How to put the differences in clients' needs. How to put the right people in their strengths, in their energy to fuel the growth.
Wow, I like that one. Very curious to talk to her next. For now, thank you, Lisbeth. It was a very nice conversation. Learned a lot of it, so I trust our listeners as well. And yeah, for our listeners, don't forget to tune in to our next podcast. And for you, Lisbeth, thank you again and have a good day.
Thank you, Coco. It was a pleasure.
Great, thanks.